All right, hello and welcome to another episode of Comics Rule Everything Around Me, a podcast within a podcast where we talk about the things we love and, you know, life and stuff, but specifically about comics. I'm Chris, your host, your podcast pal, and with me here today, as in the last two episodes of Comics Rule Everything Around Me, is Matt Drain. Hey, Matt.
Hey.
Today we don't have anything super specific to talk about in the world of comics other than the world of comics. We do have some, we've got an email and some Twitter questions that I want to get to.
Okay.
But definitely a lot of, this has been a kind of a hot time in the world of comics.
Yeah.
As far as certainly some things going on. I don't know. Let's see. Where do we even start? The two big things, I think the two things most kind of like most pressing in my mind are, we'll try to keep this spoiler free,
okay,
but also we probably won't. So, we're going to be talking about Secret Empire, Captain America, probably going to be talking some about Superman. I would like to talk about the Fantastic Four because Matt and I talked about the Fantastic Four yesterday, and I want you guys to hear Matt's idea for a Fantastic Four movie. I thought it was a very good, Matt's pitch for a Fantastic Four movie was very good. So I want you guys to hear it. And I'll try to act surprised when he tells me about it again. Talking about the Fantastic Four, and we'll see what else we get into. We'll see what other questions you guys ask. So let me start things off with an email that we got about Captain America specifically. So, I guess I should, oh my Lord. This email is longer than I thought it was, but it's a good email. So, let's see. Oh boy.
This is about Captain America?
Yes. Okay. So here's the problem. This email comes to us from, listener Brandon Medley, who, he's written such a good, thoughtful email. The problem is I'm kind of like, oh, what part do I even leave out to get to the point of the thing? I'm just gonna read the email and
okay.
And then we can react to it. And so Brandon Medley asks, "Hey Chris, I need some help understanding what's going on with Captain America lately. I haven't followed the comic in a number of years, but I haven't been able to avoid the internet back and forth over Nick Spencer and the whole Secret Empire thing. I know last year when it was revealed that Cap was part of Hydra, it penetrated even mainstream media. I felt like the people outraged by this were people who likely hadn't read many comics." This is exactly what Matt and I were talking about at lunch. Things like that happen all the time, run their course and change back. I think you even said something to that effect on one of the podcasts. I did. But of course, when I said that, it was, I'm going to jump in with a little bit of when I said that, not much had happened yet. It was very much the kind of thing where I was like, yeah, this seems like usual comics.
We've seen more of the story now.
We've seen more of the story, and we've also seen more of how, but now I'm seeing more and more backlash, not just against the storyline, which I understand has expanded into a universe-wide event, and Nick Spencer himself. I've heard about the comic shops being asked to wear Hydra shirts, the Inhumans being put in concentration camps, etc. If I'm following correctly, I think Spencer has said some things on Twitter that have been at least construed as being sympathetic towards the alt-right. Really not sure on this one. Is this all just an example of internet outrage being overblown? Are there legit problems with the story and or writer? Is people's outrage concerning the current political climate being projected onto this comic story? Is it another example of people outside comics culture blowing something out of proportion without really understanding how superhero events tend to go? I've seen people whose opinions seem well thought out come down on both sides of this. I figured you were probably following the story, and if you weren't, you probably at least had a pretty good idea of what's going on. I'd love to get your take on all this. Thanks, Brandon Medley, age 33, which he says because he listened to the old show. Thank you for putting that in, Brandon. We know how to talk to you. We know it's safe to not talk to you like you're a second grader.
If he was a second grader, that'd be a brilliant.
That would be a really impressive. Be super impressed with your vocabulary there, young man.
I'd say yes. It's a bit of all those things.
Yeah, that's kind of the funny thing about it is that there's definitely all of those things kind of play into it. It's something from all of those categories of has now kind of fallen into a perfect storm of a thing that it's like you, it's hard to be mad at people who are mad about this.
Yeah.
I think people who are upset about this, whether they are comic fans or not, are more than likely completely justified, unless they're just like off somewhere way out in the wilderness about, like, you know, their thoughts on it are coming way out of, like, I'm mad because this doesn't have enough Captain America. This doesn't speak enough to Captain America's time as a werewolf.
Right.
You know, unless it's something like that.
That's always tough for me, too, if people are only reacting to the media reaction they've seen and haven't actually read it. That's always tough. And and there's people that say, well, I don't need to read it to know this is not right. But
well, and with some stuff, you go, if you're like, man, I just have a hard line stance against stuff that's like trying to put Nazis possibly in a favorable light.
Right.
If that's your stance, then I agree. I'm not into that. But yeah, this is one of those things. And Matt and I have talked about this several times. This is one of those things where I think Nick Spencer's Twitter interactions have. Okay, so I'll go back to what I said when the first issue came out, or maybe it was like the first couple issues or something. I don't know, of the new Captain America book, where it had the first issue had that big Hail Hydra reveal.
Yeah, that was the last page of issue one.
Yeah. That at the time, you know, there was like a big uproar about that. And at the time I was like, come on, y'all. This is how comics are.
Yeah.
But since then, since I said that, a lot more stuff has happened. And, you know, I think we both had said, if you could try to read the story completely in a vacuum separate from the current real world
political climate stuff.
Yeah, and just kind of like what's going on in the real world and completely separate from Nick Spencer as a Twitter personality, I think that you might be able to read this and go like, this is interesting.
Yeah.
How's Cap going to get out of this one?
Right.
You know, how are the good guys going to win this one? Because ultimately, that's what I want to happen in comics.
And it's what's going to happen. Like, the good guys are going to win.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
Ultimately, yeah, I'm like, the whole reason I read comics, or superhero comics at least, is it's like, in the end, the good guys are going to win. And
the story's not will they get out of it, it's how they're going to get out
of it. Yeah, that's what's interesting.
Name's on the front of the book, you're going to get out of it, because Marvel still needs to sell more Captain America comics.
Yeah. I remember back in the, late 90s. There was a Captain America story where, by Mark Waid, and it was like, I think it was like right after, what was that thing? Was it Heroes Reborn?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was Mark Waid and Ron Garney had been doing this incredible job of reinvigorating the Captain America book. They'd literally brought Captain America, both figuratively and literally, back from back from the brink of death. And it was like, people were really loving it. It was like super acclaimed. And the way that that book started, something really bad happened and everyone thought Captain America was a traitor to America. And he got exiled, or he was kicked out of the country.
Yeah.
By the president. The president was like, I know that you probably didn't do this. I believe in you, but it's like just the way it looks. You know, we're going to have to, what do they call it when you're, is it exiled?
Yeah. Exiled. Close enough.
Yeah. But he was
deported.
Deported. Yeah. But he was like, you're no longer an American citizen. You're not allowed to ever come back to America. Captain America is not allowed to come back to America ever. And, you're not Captain America anymore. You got to leave the shield here. Leave the uniform and go to France. Literally, that's where he goes. They send him to France. And you read that and you're going like, if that happened today, the outrage would be astronomical.
Sure.
And you're reading it and you're going like, no, what? And it's all, you know, it's set up so like, yeah, it seems obvious that no one else could have done this but Captain America, this bad thing. It has to be him, but he says he didn't do it, you know, so like, well, and then you go, how is he going to get out of it? And it's like, then not long after that, then Heroes Reborn happened and they had to kind of stop like right in the middle of their thing. And they came back and they started this other one. And there was like a whole like two issues basically talking about how important Captain America's shield was to him. Like just what a part of him it was. And then at the end of the second, this is also by Mark Waid, like then at the end of the second issue or something, he loses his shield like at the bottom of the ocean or something. And then it, or something happens and it gets broken. And they're like, we can't fix it. Your shield was one of a kind. Sorry, Cap.
You had a lot.
Yeah. After this whole thing of like talking about how important it was to him, what a part of him it was. And you go, well, eventually he's going to get that shield back. Yeah. Eventually he's going to get back into America. But how is he going to do it?
Yeah, that's the story.
Yeah. And so having read all that kind of stuff, it was easy in those first issues to go like, yeah, okay, how's he going to get out of this? But that's in a vacuum of just reading comics.
Yeah, in a vacuum, I think Captain America, Secret Empire, I think it's a good story. If these guys are clearly bad guys, we're not rooting for them to win. We want to see Cap restored to his former...
The captain. We want him to be Chris Evans again.
Yeah, his former superheroic self, and he will be. I'm 110% sure he will be. And the story is how. And so in a vacuum, man, it's a really compelling, interesting story. There's some disturbing things happening in it. But again, that's another element of good fiction. Like, yeah. if it's creeping you out, if some of this stuff is ringing, kind of, oh, this is kind of too close to home type stuff. And that's probably intentional to highlight how sinister, how evil.
Well, yeah, there was something you said in there. Like, we were talking about this yesterday, and I was talking about how there was some stuff in Secret Empire, number one. Number two just came. There's been Zero, the Free Comic Book Day issue.
So four issues total.
Number one, and then number two came out this week. And I was talking about how there was some stuff in issue one, which was technically the third issue, I guess, or the second issue. Maybe it came out before the Free Comic Book Day issue. Not important. But in issue number one, there was some stuff where when I was reading it, I was just going like, it literally was kind of like making me feel kind of like, I don't know if sick is the right word, but I was just like, I don't like the way this is making me feel. And then that thing you said about how like, well, yeah, maybe that's kind of probably intentional about some of the smaller things, right, like the subtle stuff.
Where you kind of subtly see it creeping into culture, the re-education stuff, the way they're enforcing things. You're like, man, I could almost see that actually happening.
Yeah, those things where it's like, oh, it's not just bad guys busting up in and blowing things up. It's like the really insidious stuff, or the things of where it's like, with that little, there's a part, you know, where that kid's like, but last year you said that it was this. And then the teacher's going like, no,
we burned those textbooks.
Yeah, we burned those books. And you're just like, oh, I don't like this.
Yeah.
Somebody punched something. Which is not, obviously not to say that I think superheroes can be a lot of different, you can do a lot of different kinds of stories with superhero comics. And I think that they can be a great tool for helping us sort of process stuff in a way that is, well, perfect example, this week's episode of Supergirl is, there's this big alien, spoilers this week's Supergirl, there's this big alien fleet shows up at Earth and they're gonna occupy and take over basically, and they're like, hi, it's like, we've come here to make this planet a new Daxum.
Like you do.
Yeah, like you do. And it's like, we're going to make everything great. You know, we're going to show you how great our culture is, and you're all going to have much better lives. And like, they literally are like, you know, they're coming in and saying, oh, and if you don't like it, we're going to shoot you, or, you know, throw you in jail or whatever. And the name of this week's episode was Resist. And there's even a part where like one of the characters is like given this big speech, and it's like, you know, these people are coming in they're coming at us with, you know, like lies and like closed fists and saying they're going to make Earth great again.
They used that line exactly.
Yeah, they actually said make Earth great again. And they were like, but, you know, we are stronger than they think we are. And it's like, even it seems scary and blah, 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 but we're strong together and mm-hmm. we're much stronger than they think we are. And it's like united, they can't stop us. You know, like we will fight back and we'll show them that we're not going to be scared. We're not going to be intimidated, blah, 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 blah. And all that stuff. And it's like, that's very topical.
Sure.
But through a superhero story that makes it like, gives it some kind of, I don't know. There's no one in the real world right now standing up and being broadcast suddenly across all of the TV screens right. and phones and everything all at once going like, we're all in this together. We can, you know, it's like, and sometimes you want, you're like, I wish that would happen in real life. Like yeah. that someone would really go like, hey, we're all, you know, we're all together on this. So I think that you can totally do topical, important cultural things with superhero stories. But yeah, sometimes this is all going back to like, sometimes when you show that it's those like really the insidious things, the things that creep in that makes you really uncomfortable. And it's easy to see how people get really upset by that.
Yeah. And if a person's reading that and they're like, man, this hits too close to home for me. I'm not really comfortable with this. This is not the story for me. Hey, that's fine.
And yeah, it's
thousands
totally,
of comics you could read.
Yeah, it's fine, but it's like it's also, and I'm, I'm not trying to defend Marvel or Nick Spencer, but I am saying like all of those, a lot of those things that I think are upsetting people, probably very intentionally done to try to elicit that response, and hopefully so that you go, you know, then at the end where it's like, oh boy, when Captain America, when the goodness of Captain America yeah. comes back out and the good guys beat all of this stuff, you know, it's like, it makes it feel that much better. Like they've really overcome something. Boy.
Yeah.
But all of this stuff we're talking about is in a vacuum.
It's just the story. So, yeah. So what's, what adds to it is the, I guess, responses from Nick Spencer and Marvel editorial and stuff kind of doubling down on things you know are not true. Like he's always ever been Hydra.
Yeah.
You know that's not true. and he's always going to, you know, I don't think they've said he's always going to be. But I remember, again, we talked about this is comics. You know, if a character dies, no, they're dead for good. We promise.
Like, seriously.
Peter Parker is definitely dead. It's definitely Otto Octavius now. Superman is definitely dead. And you know he's not. There's no yeah. way. And the story is...
To be fair, I think when Superman died, there hadn't quite been the cycle of death and coming back where it was like, it used to be if a character died, you'd go like, oh no, that's sad. They died, but it wasn't on the news.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was like in comics, somebody would die and you go like, oh.
So maybe Superman first shoved that revolving door to yeah. where now.
When Superman died, though, and we've talked about this, but when Superman died, when that issue came out, I was like, I thought he was really dead. I mean, of course, I was a kid, but like, I really thought he was. I was like, he's not.
And they're just replacing him with these other dudes.
Well, we didn't even know that was going to happen. You know, it was
yeah.
months
yeah,
before.
Yeah, took a couple issues.
Yeah, I mean, there was like 8 issues of The Funeral for a Friend. So that's like 2 months of Superman comics where he was just gone. And then there was a bunch of months where there were no Superman comics. And then
they stopped publishing
mm-hmm.
for a little while. I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Seems scary, right?
I remember picking up, is it Superman 500?
It was Adventures of Superman 500.
The greenish cover and he and his dad.
It's him and his,
fighting his way through the afterlife, trying yeah. to get back.
The cover looks like, it depends on if you had the collector's edition cover, the direct
I'm
market
sure not.
Collector's edition cover or the newsstand, which is what we used to call back when comics.
I probably got it at a Walmart or a Kroger
yeah,
or something.
Back when you could get comics on the quote unquote newsstand at places like Kroger and 7-Eleven. And the newsstand cover was like Superman and Pa Kent in like a green cloudy background with there was like big faces and sort of like monsters and whatever. But the collector's edition copy was. Came in a white bag with the red Superman S on it. Unlike the Death of Superman issue was like a black bag with the bloody S on it.
Well, I learned something today. I didn't realize there was a couple months where they weren't publishing them.
Yeah.
That would have made it even more like, ugh.
It was a horrifying time for me. Like my number
Hope you like Batman. Superman's yeah. done.
Yeah, well, we're done with this guy. Well, and when you're a kid and you don't really quite have the context for... Mm-hmm. When you're not thinking about, this is a business, they're not really going to keep Superman, right. You know. Anyway.
So fast forward 20 years and we don't believe anybody's dead. Not really.
We don't believe anything comics say anymore.
We don't believe any hero is really evil. They're going to be returned to the status quo. And then the story is, you're along for the ride for how's it going to happen? And I want to approach Secret Empire like that, you know, open-minded. Hey, we're going to maybe in for an interesting story. And eventually, if you hate it, it's okay because Cap's going to be back to status quo. They'll have some other writer on the book. You just stick around or don't stick around. Just leave and then come back.
Like, yeah, come back when it's back to being something you like.
And I think what makes it hard to just appreciate it or appreciate it's maybe not the right word, to read it in a vacuum is all the social media stuff. So
I think the biggest issue here has been Nick Spencer on Twitter. If it were not for that, I think that this would not be quite as... The reception to this would not be the same. I think there would still be a lot of negative reception to it. And my whole time, I'm just going like, as this has built and built and built, because this has been going on for months and months and months.
Yeah.
Long before any of Secret Empire came out.
At least a year, if not more.
Has it been that long, man? It's crazy to think that, I mean, you're probably right, but it's like.
Because Captain America is probably on issue... It's in the teens, so even double shipping, that's a year.
Yeah, man. Yeah, you're right. Just watching this, like, continuing, going on and on and on. Like, with Nick Spencer's, like, some of his interactions with people about this online have just been bizarre. Of, like, why would anyone engage in this? Like, why are you bothering arguing with people on Twitter? And I'm sure he is getting some, like, you know, they said he was getting death threats and
right.
like, all this stuff. And it's like, I'm sure he is getting, along with the people who are just like genuinely feel like kind of betrayed by this or feel like this is really something that's morally wrong
right.
on the publisher's part. And of course, I have to imagine that when they planned this out, they did not anticipate quite what the state of the world was going to
you
be.
You can't. Yeah. And that's another tough thing for people, maybe don't read a lot of comics or don't understand how comics are made. It's not, even though it is topical, it's not as topical as maybe it feels because these things take months to plan.
Yeah.
Even after it's written, months to draw. I remember when the people were talking about, well, the second issue is just a response to the backlash for the first issue. And it's like, that's not how comics work.
he probably had
the first six or seven issues written before the first one was on the stands.
You want to think, but of course we won't know until we, and you can't really trust anything that people tell us right now.
Right.
You can't, I don't think you can trust anything that is coming out of like actual from Marvel. Right. It will probably be years before we find out all of the necessarily what the real story is mm-hmm. behind all this. But, you know, if they say that, you know, how things are going is how we planned this all along. You know, there's a bunch of this stuff. They probably first started putting this together. Yeah. Like well over a year ago. And you think about some of these things. We did not foresee how a lot of these things in the real world were going to turn out. I mean, it felt very much to me and like to, from the predictions and not from, you know, like analysts online, experts, stuff like that, to down to just people I knew, like everyone really felt like Hillary was going to win.
Yeah.
It, you know, even in like the primaries or like, well, first of all, people didn't think Trump was ever going to get the, guys, I don't want to get like too, but I'm just saying it's like people never thought he was going to get the nomination.
Sure.
And then he did. And it's like, well, there's no way he's going to win. But you have to think about when they started planning out Secret Empire, Nick Spencer wasn't even on the book. This was like supposedly, what's his name?
Rick Remender.
Yeah.
Was running Cap before Spencer. And even though he didn't have the fully formed idea for Hydra Cap and Secret Empire,
yeah.
he had an idea for a story like that where Hydra kind of rises to power because one of them is secretly anyway.
Yeah. So it's like they started planning this so long ago that it's like they probably, but then you're kind of stuck where you're like, oh, we've got this whole big thing planned and we don't have anything to replace it if we don't do this. And it's like,
And we were talking at lunch, there's two different personalities. Some people that would say, hey, we shouldn't do this because of what's going on in the culture. And then you got another group of people that maybe say, that's exactly why we should do it.
Yeah.
Like
we should use this opportunity to comment on something. Even if we didn't, that was not the intention when we first planned on it. But again, all of this goes back to the fact that it's like, yeah, totally would not be. Some of Nick Spencer's interactions online and the way he's reacted to some of the stuff. And I'm sure part of it is like, he is a human being.
Sure.
And even though he is like, a sort of a public figure, I'm sure that some of the, just as much as he's getting genuine people upset at him about like, this really feels like a betrayal of whatever, you know, people who are sincere and not jerks. I'm sure he is also getting some really crazy stuff.
Wacko stuff.
Yeah. And I'm sure that all that like weighs on you as a person and just starts going like, I don't know. I'm certainly not trying to defend him, but I feel like, because I think that a lot of the way he's responded to this has been completely the wrong way to do it. But it's also like, everybody is human. And you go like, man, it's, you kind of don't know what it would be like to be in somebody's shoes where you're just getting harassed constantly about something where you're like, hey, I'm just doing the job they asked me to do. Which if he just said that, I feel like it's, I have no idea what's going on in his head.
Right. We were talking about what could he have said instead? I mean, other than just nothing, I'm not going to be on Twitter. I'm going to say, I'm just going to let the story stand for itself. A lot of creators do that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to comment on it. You guys just read it or don't. And I think I don't think I've read a lot of his defense of it and the stuff he said to other people. So I'm not really sure all the facets of that, but I've seen a lot of comic creators come to his defense saying,
man. I've also seen some that are like, that have attacked the way he is, not attacked, but have like said, this is not the way to interact with your fans or with just people. Anyway.
Strange. Yeah. A lot of the other creators have said, man, I've got death threats cause I did this to Spider-Man or I did this to some other character and I know what you're feeling. And guys, just let the story play out. Trust us.
I think the best thing he could have done, and we talked about this, but it was like really to just go like, give us a chance to see where it's going before you ask them to fire me for writing the thing that they approved me.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
But. No, that's okay. And again, I don't know what he said makes people think he's sympathetic to, fascism and
the
evil
alt-right.
And
yeah.
Other than all I can think of, I remember seeing something where he's saying that guy shouldn't have been punched, that wasn't the right way.
Oh, yeah.
Was that the catalyst? You think that was what got it?
People that was a big deal.
Thinking, oh, you're sympathetic of the alt-right.
Which he was saying, his thing was, I
could have killed the guy with just a accidentally or something. And you don't.
Yeah. Wouldn't bother me.
But I think, was that where he was trying to say?
I think he was saying that it's like, you know, violence is not the answer. And it's like, you write Captain America. He's like, we shouldn't punch Nazis. And it's like, you write the guy that punched Hitler. Like, what? I mean, of course, comics aren't real, but, you know.
Was that his thing then? Yeah,
that was his thing, was like, violence is not the answer. And it's like, hold up. as the guy who made the Punch More Nazis shirt.
Well, I was going to say, it's a little...
I think we all know where I fall on this. Speaking of the people's response to Nick Spencer on Twitter, the internet is kind of scary because, you know, I made that shirt and I had no idea it was going to like, I thought, you know, a couple people will see this and like, but all of a sudden it was completely out of my hands and it was getting like retweeted all over the place. And it's like, all of a sudden I had alt-right people. No, I had like alt-right people threatening me and like saying stuff at me. And I was like, well, that's unsettling. It's like, you know, or I was just like, well, I certainly did not expect this.
Yeah.
And there were people saying stuff to me about like, I mean, thankfully I was like, I'm not particularly like worried about them actually trying to fight me or trying to like come. And it's like, and if someone does, I don't think it's a real, after I kind of got over the initial shock of it, I was like, I don't think this is really,
I don't think you're really in danger.
Yeah. I don't think I'm at, but there was a minute where I was like, oh, I did not expect people to be threatening violence against me for making a t-shirt.
Right.
Even if the shirt is, you know, kind of violent. But, or the idea of it is. But also, I even if someone is violent towards me, I still think that punching Nazis is the right idea. But I, you know, there was stuff on there where I was just going like, and I had like a reaction of like, I don't know what to do. I've never had any interactions with these kind of people on Twitter previously.
Right.
And now all of a sudden they're saying, hateful things at me.
Yeah.
And it's like, I could certainly see how, even if like, It's easy to suddenly, and if you've got somebody, that's just over a t-shirt that kind of, you know, blew up. That's not month after month after month of people writing stories about this thing you're doing. And like, so it's like, I don't know what Nick Spencer's real thoughts are. I don't know what his politics are or whatever.
I can put myself in those shoes. I can kind of try to understand, man, if something can be solved through, people can change their hearts. People can change their, you can change a mind. You can change your heart. You can cut this if this goes too far out from what you're wanting for the podcast. But so I'm a college pastor. So I work with students from all over the place.
And you like
all kinds of backgrounds.
Yeah. And like, that's kind of part of why I want specifically about Secret Empire. Like why I kind of wanted to talk to you about this is because I feel like you do have a, where you're coming from morally is I was interested to hear what your take on all this was.
So I've had students, we were in Knoxville, rural East Tennessee, University of Tennessee for several years. Now we're at University of Memphis. And I would get students sometimes that grew up in rural East Tennessee, grew up with a lot of prejudice, racist values from their family. Man, don't blame them. It's how they were raised.
Yeah.
They're very wrong.
Yeah.
But
those feelings are wrong. But it's like when it's what you have been raised around your entire life and you've never seen anything different, the thought that it's like, until someone tries to educate you about it, it's like you don't even realize that there's anything out of the ordinary.
Right.
Here.
I had a guy named Josh, and he wouldn't mind me sharing this story. Josh was from very rural East Tennessee, grew up with a lot of prejudice, a lot of hate towards, minorities. And he'd be honest about that. And then seeing him step onto a college campus of 26,000 people, every variety of international, multicultural, and of course, he got involved in our ministry. So I got a lot of one-on-one time with him talking to him and seeing him grow and mature and just seeing the change in his heart. When he realized, man, this stuff is wrong. Like the prejudice, hey, that's just wrong. What I was taught was wrong. And then to see him reject that and come to a place where, man, he loved those people, made friends with international students. He'd be over at the apartments of Vietnamese students wanting to learn how to make their dishes and stuff. And he'd cook that for other folks in the campus ministry. Man, we even let him, Jack and I rented out our basement to students for a few years there. And man, he lived with us for a while and just totally saw
Change of attitude.
A change of heart. And of course we're Christian ministry, but so I attribute that a lot to the, you know, God working on his heart, but then also those conversations and him just exposure to a wider range of cultures than his sheltered background. So all that to say, man, people can change. Like and it's in conversations, sometimes long, hard conversations that people change, not in a thrown fist. So that's me just for a second. Like maybe I can see where maybe he's coming from.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that's what you.
So, and then there are some times where, of course, violence is called self-defense. If I got someone that's trying to hurt my family, I'm not going to be a pacifist in that moment. or someone's going to hurt somebody or do some kind of real harm or damage. I mean, there's some cases where it's not time for a conversation. Hey, please don't. Yeah, whatever. There's some things that can't be reasoned with, but if there's a chance for dialogue, for conversation, I believe people can change. Like I really believe that. So anyway, I don't know if that's a factor in, or that's what he's thinking, and maybe that's where his heart comes from, and he or maybe he sees the slippery slope of Well, now we punch these people. Tomorrow we punch these people, and now everybody's punching everybody else.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah. Who knows? We're not here to figure that out. But talking about these things is how we. It's like you said, talking about these things is how we think about it. And I feel like that so much of this stuff is happening on Twitter, where everything has got to be boiled down mm-hmm. to just like yes or no. Like you're either this or that.
For us or against us.
Yeah. And it's like, as great as Twitter can be for some things, it's like, and as certainly I have seen some very intelligent discussion said on Twitter but it's in very long threads of like, you know, 20 tweets, you know, threaded together.
And the people that take time to make those threads are not the same people that are.
Yeah. And it's like, but also you've got a key point to it right there. It's taking the time mm-hmm. to like get, I see so many people. This is the thing, and I'm pretty proud of this, is I don't think I've ever had to delete a tweet. I also don't have a lot of, like, you also don't see a lot of, like, spelling mistakes in my tweets, because anything I tweet, usually, like, I think about long enough to go, like, do I really want to say this?
Yeah.
Do I really, is it matter? Like, I mean, and sometimes I'll just say, I mean, I say dumb stuff on Twitter, but it's, like, stuff that is intentionally dumb. The stuff where I'm just like, oh, that's a silly thought.
Yeah.
You know, but, you see people who just like knee jerk, just their first response when they have a thought is to tweet it. And then you see them delete it later. And it's like, you could have saved yourself this step.
Yeah.
If you
stop
had
and
just,
think.
Yeah, just stop and think before you tweet stuff.
Yeah.
And I mean, and maybe that sounds like old fashioned or something, but I was raised by a bunch of old people. So I was raised by people much older than, you know, I'm older than grandparent age, a lot of the people I was raised around. But speaking of that, man, I was raised by a bunch of really old Southern ladies, and I definitely grew up with some prejudices that I didn't even realize I had. Mm. Like I did not, it never occurred to me that some of these things that I thought about people, it was like a prejudice. I just took it for like, oh, this is what it's like.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I started being around more people, different people, people from other walks of life, where I start going like, oh, that thing I used to think was super racist.
Right.
But I wasn't trying to. I mean, I didn't have like...
I think we've all got that.
Yeah. Well, at least those of us in the South, it's like there's a lot of... I think there's a lot of that where you just go... you don't even realize some of the things that you grow up. But some of it is like societal. Yeah. Man, we are super off topic. but I totally like,
yeah.
But also there's things, not just like prejudices about stuff like other people, right? But there's things where it's like, you don't know things until you know them. You know what I mean? Like I used to think, this is a perfect example. I used to think the death penalty was a great idea. I was like, I couldn't imagine what anybody's problem with it was. Mm-hmm. And then one night, I don't know how long April and I had been going out, but I don't think it was like a super long time. We had like a really intense conversation about it because April was like, I don't think it's a good idea. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? And we had this like really intense discussion about it. And it didn't like just magically change my mind.
Right.
But then it was like, it stuck with me to where, you know, now I'm like, yeah, that doesn't seem like a great idea. I don't think it works like I thought it did.
Sure.
You know, and April's like, you know, it's been proven. It's like, here, this study shows it's not been a deterrent or whatever. People absolutely can change.
Yeah.
And it's like, and it's dumb to think that people, if someone tells you that people can't change, I think that you have to question what they get out of telling you this, of making you think that. Unless it's just that their heart's
been hurt by
something. I absolutely think that people can change, and from whatever the belief is, people can. I mean, well, you hear about that guy who was like raised, not just raised in like a super alt-right family, but like in a super alt-right like community, was like being groomed to be their like future leader. This is a young man. I can't remember the guy's name, whatever, but this is a guy who was like, and had like, even as like a teenager and stuff, was like given speeches at like alt-right things, and then went to college and started meeting different people and like has completely renounced all of that now.
Yeah.
And has like gone, you know, it's like, I was wrong, you know, like, and I think that people who, you know, when, like people who don't change their minds when presented with new information is like, well, that's dumb. So it's dumb to, it's also dumb to be like, to give people a hard time for changing their minds or thinking right. that they can't change their mind. Well, I don't know.
People can change, people can grow, and who knows?
Who knows?
And yeah, just,
I don't know what that has to do with Captain America, but,
other than, yeah. In if it's in defense of Nick Spencer, that maybe giving him the benefit of the doubt, maybe that's where he was coming from. Yeah, on that.
But he's, I mean, obviously, honestly, I know that there has been a ton of stuff that he has said. It's like it all turns so. I mean, I saw some of the things he was saying, and I was just like, I got to check out of this. I'm yeah. like, this is like for my own well being.
Yes, I need to same
not,
here. Same
I need
here.
To I'm not read follow.
A, I've not read a ton of it either because for the same.
Yeah.
Same reason as, I mean, I got enough to get the gist and it's like, I don't need to get swept up in all of this.
So I hope that answers your, Brandon, I hope that answers your Captain America question. And guys, I hope that you feel like this conversation has been worthwhile, giving you something to think about as far as the Captain America thing is. I think we probably only got time. We talked about that much longer than I thought we were going to. Matt,
like 20 minutes or so?
Matt, I want you to tell everyone about one, I want you to tell everyone why you like the Fantastic Four so much.
Wow.
If you can, because I still want you to have time to tell them your pitch for the Fantastic okay. Four movie, because you told it to me yesterday at lunch and it was great. And I also still want to have time to answer some of our Twitter questions because we got a bunch in while I was not looking at it. So
let's talk about Fantastic Four.
Yeah. Why are the Fantastic Four so great? To you,
that's so the standard answer is the family. Ask yeah. the family dynamics, so you don't get.
But you've always liked the Fantastic.
I have.
Like since I've known you, you've liked the Fantastic Four, and not just when you were a family man.
Yeah, that's true. I like the characters. I like the science fiction edge it has. It's not straight superhero stuff. It's sci-fi adventure. Stuff.
They're more adventurers than they are. They're adventurers and explorers more than they are.
Imaginauts.
Yeah, imaginauts, exactly.
So yeah, I liked the idea of them. I liked the characters. I liked Reed Richards. I liked Sue.
Who's your favorite? And the
probably Reed.
Okay.
As far as being just really interesting.
Yeah.
They each have their own. You can go for forever on Ben Grimm. You go forever on Johnny. They're all interesting.
Not on Sue.
I mean, Sue's had some great moments too. But yeah, so I like.
Him. I will be fair. I'll say that I think of the Fantastic Four characters, I think Sue, unfortunately, is the character who has in the history. And there, if you look at their entire history, she is sort of the character who has been most underserved.
Yeah.
As like showing, I mean, more recently, great writers have shown. What a great character she is, like what her place is. And it's not just to be
right.
invisible.
Anyway. Yeah. There's some subtextual stuff going on there with her powers to be exactly. invisible. But, Mark Waid's run on Fantastic Four though, with Mike Waringo, that stands up as my favorite comic book run of all time.
Oh, wow. Really? That.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
Yeah. Favorite of all time. When I was reading those, I was like, man, this is, and he's writing on his page. Those first few issues are a thesis, a manifesto on why Fantastic Four is great.
That first issue that they did,
the 9 cent issue.
I have tried to get like every time I find a copy of that, I buy it so that I can like give it to someone just like to go like, man, you want to talk about like same deal with Flash number 0. Flash number 0 is probably my favorite single issue of a comic that doesn't involve Superman. You know, there's an issue of All-Star Superman, probably number 10, would be like my absolute all-time favorite, but not counting Superman. Flash number 0 by Mike Waid, Mark Waid,
Mark
and
Waid,
Mike Waringo. I'll cut that out. is like one of the, such a perfect encapsulation of like a character. And man, that when they, I think it's issue 60 or 55, something in there. Whatever that issue, that 9 cent issue, because it was like an actual numbered issue. such a perfect, like, really lays out this is why these guys are so great.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
And then he backs it up with however many issues, you know, 30 issues of just really great stories, and you fall in love with those characters. And so I've not
taken
missed,
them places they've never gone.
I've not missed an issue of Fantastic Four since.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Like, that's one. I've got two comics that I'll always buy no matter who's writing or drawing them, and that's Amazing Spider-Man and Fantastic Four.
Pretty rough.
Marvel doesn't still publish Fantastic Four and hasn't for over a year. Hey, Marvel, I'd buy it if you'd make it. It really doesn't matter what you're doing with it. I'd probably read it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, love those characters. Love those stories. And yeah, it's the sci-fi edge. It's the family dynamic stuff. It's just the creativity.
Yeah.
Just the crazy outside the box fun stuff you can do with them that you don't see with other superhero comic books. Unfortunately, when you look at Marvel's movie landscape, and Marvel's making some amazing movies, like 15 plus movies they've had come out for this Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's so exciting to see all these characters interact on the big screen. And but then Marvel Studios does not have the rights for Fantastic Four. They're sitting over at Fox, and it's like, man, that's really tough.
Because the Fantastic Four are really, as much as Spider-Man also is, but it's like wouldn't be the Marvel Universe as we know it without the Fantastic Four. And so, like, to see them, who are literally like they're the heart cornerstone,
the first family
of the Marvel Universe, and to see them not getting to be a part of this biggest thing that the Marvel Universe has ever done, kind of, you know, like the biggest as far as like the most widespread around the real world.
Right.
And to see them missing out on it is kind of heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's tough. And I guess the way stuff is legally with rights and studios and stuff, I mean, Fox has no big incentive to let it go. So you just think, oh man, sadly.
Other than that, they could work out a deal where then it's like, hey, you guys would be making a lot more money.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would think it's hopeless, except for, man, we saw Spider-Man, that Sony's like, hey, we can make some money. Let's work out a deal. And everyone's like, okay, Fox, do the same thing.
Please.
If not with X-Men, at least with Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
And so that had me thinking, like, okay, let's say they write up that contract. They figure out a way. Everyone's happy. Fox makes money. Disney makes money. And you can get Fantastic Four brought into the Marvel Universe. Well, how do you do it? Because now that we're 15, 20 movies in,
yeah. Hasn't been a Fantastic Four.
It'd be weird for them to just show up. So I had this idea around the time of the second Cap movie, Winter Soldier. I had an idea. I mean, what if you did it this way? So I had pictured something very similar to what we saw in the comic books. Reed Richards, Victor Von Doom are college roommates. This is going to be set in the modern time. Yeah, I wasn't going to make them necessarily older, but or maybe set a few years back, 10 years back, something there. College roommates and even friends. And the friendship between Victor and Reed was going to be kind of at the center of the story.
I forgot where because you said, like, you mentioned, like, in Winter Soldier. I was thinking about the flashbacks.
Oh, yeah. Soldier. Yeah. Okay. No, yeah. Not flashing back.
I forgot where you go.
To the 60s. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it would be a flashback. So you have them in college together. And there's, I mean, even though Victor's still Victor, he's still proud. He's still arrogant. There's elements of friendship there and affection for each other's friends. And then Victor's big experiment. So in this story, Reed is doing his big college thesis or whatever on unstable molecules, trying to figure those out. And Victor's doing his portal to another dimension thing to try to contact the dead, contact his mother, which is, man, all that stuff's in the comics there. yeah. And Reed overlooking his work sees a big problem. Hey, Victor, I noticed a big problem here, something we need to adjust for, or else it's going to blow up in your face, literally. And so Victor, being arrogant, says, no, you imbecile or whatever. and he goes ahead and makes the machine. He tests it. And yeah, sure enough, it does blow up in his face. And I just picture the scene in my mind, him and Reed, like, kind of there in the wreckage of the burning building, whatever they destroy, that, of course, gets them kicked out of school. And so in that explosion, you know, Reed does glimpse a portal opens up to another dimension, negative zone, whatever. And he says, man, you know, Victor, I'm really sorry this happened. Of course, Victor's furious at him. He says, for what it's worth, though, you were right. Like, your machine worked.
I saw it work.
Yeah, even though we're in big trouble now, your machine worked. Like, I believe. And so their friendship's hurt. You know, of course, Victor goes back to Latveria or whatever. But then Reed just has this idea in his head that there's other dimensions, there's ways to access that. And so he throws himself into that kind of work, that kind of research. A lot like what we saw in Ultimate Fantastic Four, Reed just being obsessed with opening a way to the negative zone. And so fast forward, this has been Reed's life's work. He's figured out a way. And the need for the rocket and going into space is that he's figured out maybe in those low gravity conditions and with the cosmic rays storm that's coming. It just is right. Yeah. It has to be now. Like, right. I can create just the right conditions to open up a portal to this other, to the negative zone, to another dimension. And so S.H.I.E.L.D. is like, yeah, we're all about it. We want to study this stuff. There's crazy stuff starting to go on in the world, and we want to know more about it. So S.H.I.E.L.D. funds. They build their rocket. They build all the stuff they need for the experiment. And then Winter Soldier happens, and they realize,
you could even tie it to something that happens, like that moment when we see something that happens like in Avengers with the wormhole and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying it's something like you could tie it as like, this is why we have to go to space.
Right. Yeah. Like, oh yeah. We got to be ready for whatever. We've got to understand how these portals work so we don't get invaded by the next one. So S.H.I.E.L.D. funds it. They say, hey, you're good to go.
I'm not trying to like,
oh no, that's a great idea.
Trying to like glom onto your idea.
And so S.H.I.E.L.D. falls apart and Winter Soldier with Hydra infiltration stuff. And the project gets shut down. The rocket's on the launch pad, ready to go.
Literally, when all that stuff breaks loose with Winter Soldier, when the helicarriers are crashing, and
so that's what makes Reed decide, okay, this has to happen. This is my life's work. We're going to steal the rocket. Gets Ben, gets Sue, gets Johnny, and says, "Man, it's all fueled up and ready to go. If there wasn't for all this political drama, man, we could do the greatest science, whatever." And so they steal the rocket. They go up there. They successfully open up the portal, and then they disappear into it. And then you could, you know, fast forward to the present, wherever Marvel's at when they decide to get a hold of this great idea.
Yeah. This great idea,
Kevin,
that you have.
Kevin Feige can call me or email me.
DM Matt. I'll put his Twitter in the show notes.
And so Marvel's been building towards the Infinity Gauntlet, Infinity Wars with Thanos, and I'm sure reality bending stuff happening there. That'd be a perfect time for a portal to rip open in the sky, and then their rocket kind of falls out, and they're, you know, where are we kind of thing. And
in the midst of all this chaos, and now they have, not only do you have like a person with like a super brain who knows more about this reality stuff, like, or you could even do it as like, oh, I know how we can get rid of this guy. In a way that doesn't kill him, since Marvel probably does not want to kill their like ultimate mega bad guy. We're going to trap him in this other place. You've got a guy who's like an expert on that now. Plus, then you've also got the extra muscle of the other three of like who have these incredible powers, these fantastic powers.
Fantastic powers. Yeah. So that was my idea of a way to insert them into what's going on.
And to make them immediately like really important.
Yeah.
As important as they should be. Man, I love it. It's a great idea.
So maybe they'll do it.
Maybe they won't.
I'm happy to see whatever they do. I trust Marvel's movie division pretty implicitly now, because it's like they've done amazing stuff with characters where I was like, how are they going to pull this off? All right. So let's see. James at James D. Leach on Twitter asks, are you as unbelievably excited as me for the reveal of the three Jokers? Do you think DC have forgotten about it?
I don't know. I don't know what, I guess, is that a big, I know. So that was the reveal in Justice League when Batman's on the Mobius.
Well, you don't know that that's what it is at that point.
Is that not happened till Rebirth number one? Okay. Yeah. And it says that. There's not, and I guess that's DC's way of reconciling having really different Jokers throughout their publishing history.
Yeah. I definitely do not think that they have just, I don't think they have forgotten about it. And I am very curious to see what they do with it, but I don't have like a take on it.
Well, Tom King's got a Joker centric story coming up.
Riddler War. Yeah, which I'm sure
it'll be one of the Jokers.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure that we will start getting some, look, guys, I got to give it to DC. With how they have been handling all this Rebirth stuff, like the way that they have been seeding these ideas and sort of dropping stuff. Also, this has been a real big week for Superman as far as with the announcement of, well, the last issue of the Batman Flash crossover, The Button, part four, mm-hmm. came out this week.
Yeah, Wednesday.
Which, have you read that yet?
No.
I saw that you bought it, but you didn't
read it. Yeah, I've not read it yet.
Well, without any spoilers, I'll say I think it's a very cool issue, and Howard Porter's art is just incredible.
He's a longtime Flash artist. He's done a lot with Flash, hasn't he?
Well, I mean, I always think of him as the guy from
Justice League.
Grant Morrison's Justice League. But it's like...
He did Fantastic Four, too. He filled in for Waringo.
For a little bit, yeah. And then... but also here lately, he's done like... He did some of that Justice League 3000 / Justice League 3001.
Okay.
He did some issues on Superman before Rebirth, like right up leading up to the end of the New 52 Superman. Specifically, I think issue 50 he did of Superman, which is just like his art on it was incredible. And it really felt like... Superman. He was the artist on that Scooby Apocalypse book. And it's a fun book, man. It's okay. Like, it's fun. Talk about a guy who has just kind of like reinvented himself over the years as like, and just keeps honing his craft. Mm-hmm. This new issue of Flash that he does the art for is...
Did he do War of Kings too? The Marvel Cosmic stuff?
I don't know.
I might be confusing it with somebody else, but...
I didn't read that. I don't read trash, so I'm just kidding. So I'm certainly, the way that Marvel has been seeding some of these ideas, and then with the big announcement of Doomsday Clock that Geoff Johns just announced like on Sunday, mm-hmm. which a real weird time to put out a teaser for a big thing with Watchmen. Basically, well, I mean, he says what it is. This is not a spoiler because he basically said what it is, which is... Superman versus Dr. Manhattan.
Right. It's a standalone and not massive crossover, well, which I'm
That's what I was going to say. It's like the deal with The Button. It's like, it was so cool that was not its own miniseries, that it happened in four issues of Batman and the Flash.
Right.
Like to make it feel like, oh, these individual comics matter.
Right.
Which to some people, maybe that is not a thing, but it's when you've been reading comics, it's like you start to have this thing. It's like, I don't want this to all feel. And when you've seen these like reboots and like rebirths, you go like, I don't want to feel like this thing that I'm investing all my time in is just so disposable.
Right. And a lot of times tie-in stuff to big events feel that way. Yeah.
So I don't know if that answers your question,
Well, with
James.
The Joker, so Scott Snyder's Joker was like this supernatural force of nature, unkillable monster. So I guess there's, he's like an immortal.
I think you've read more of it than I have.
I read all of New 52 Batman.
You're a big fan of Scott Snyder's Batman.
I mean, it's cool. Right. And Greg Capullo's, man, his art, man, I was on board for that too. And yeah, he did a super, super evil, creepy Joker, but then he's not just a criminal or not even just a psychopath. He's like this immortal force of nature that, man, Bruce is digging through old files of Gotham from 100 years ago. And this guy, smiling guy, is lurking in the corners of old historic pictures and stuff. So there's something there. There's some kind of ancient evil that's Joker. And then you've got like probably the mobster criminal Joker, and then I guess a third one.
at ATI, what is this? I'm sorry, I can't tell what your whole Twitter name is. ATI Channel, which ATI apparently stands for, another terrible idea, said they will retcon it as one Joker, one smoker, and one midnight toker, which I just think is
Scott Miller.
Steve Miller.
Steve Miller. Steve Miller Band.
Which I think is just a good joke. So I hope that answers your question, James. Maybe not at all.
Probably not.
at Vic Perfecto asks, is Superman's pal, Jimmy Olsen, intimidated by Superman's best friend, Batman? Well, first of all, I don't think that Batman is Superman's best friend. I think that Lois is probably his best friend, and then Jimmy right after that. I think that everyone is a little intimidated by Batman, but I think that...
That's healthy.
Yeah. but I think that also Batman... in my mind, Batman is fully aware of Jimmy, and also ideally in my mind, it's like Jimmy and Robin, not Damian, but Jimmy and previous Robins have also kind of been friends and had adventures. And so Batman recognizes Jimmy's importance to Superman as just, and as a good guy. So he probably doesn't try to intimidate him all that much.
Yeah. There's not a lot to gain in spooking
Superman's
Jimmy.
Pal. Oh my gosh. Oh, all right. So I told people, I also said, if you have any non-comic questions, we'll answer those too. And, Brandon Medley, who we've all already really, I think, serviced quite a bit in answering his email.
He's a good email writer.
Yeah, good email writer. But then asked us on Twitter, what's the secret to getting charcoal to stay lit so long?
I have no idea. I use propane in the grill at home.
I use propane and propane accessories because I want to taste the meat, not the heat. That's not true. We don't even grill stuff. I have absolutely no idea. Lighter fluid? That would be my guess. That's what I would try to use.
I mean, that gets it for a second, but it doesn't keep it going long term.
Yeah, I have no idea, Brandon. I'll look into that. At IMC, Jason D asks, why are there so few classic canon main DCU Superman stories? His best, All-Star, Red Sun, Birthright, Kingdom Come are all self-contained. Well, I've talked about this before. I think that Birthright basically can kind of stand as, like, if you want to have that be Superman's origin. And I think that All-Star sort of is, yeah, I mean, it is kind of its own thing. But also, it's, I feel like part of the beauty of it is the fact that it sort of treats all of Superman's history as canon.
Yeah, I guess 75 years of continuity is a double-edged sword. It's what makes comics great, and it's also can become a prison. So those outside of continuity stories, they have more freedom. They can tell a different kind of story, or they can have some liberties.
And they can use just what they want to use from all that continuity. Yeah. You know, they can kind of pick and choose. That's probably it.
They're not hamstringed by
any particular thing. They can just kind of do what they use only the best bits and kind of not pay attention to the other stuff.
Or do something wildly different that would not make sense in the regular universe, or you'd have to have everyone deal with it. And that's not the story I want to tell. I just want to tell this story. And
yeah. I think that you're so often like you said, so hamstrung by what else is happening month to month at a comic publisher, mm-hmm. that it's hard to go like, whereas with some of these one-off things, those are clearly ideas that people have had time to think about for a long time and like have ruminate in the back of their head and go, well, because when you hear like Grant Morrison talk about how long he had been sort of like thinking on the ideas that ended up becoming All-Star Superman, you know, that was like a decade plus mm-hmm. of ideas he'd just been thinking about in the back of his head. Whereas when you're just like, I have to get this thing out on time.
Right.
You know, we've got a monthly deadline. You know, and I think some of that stuff is true for, it's not just Superman. You know, I mean, like a lot of characters who have been around for a long time, there's stuff that is maybe, I think that there's like, I'll use Spider-Man as another example. I love Spider-Man the character, and he's got like tons of these like great, amazing moments. But some of those moments that we remember as being like really great, like moments that are just burned into our minds, happen in the midst of stories where you're like, oh, I didn't even remember that that's what the story that was. You know, yeah. I didn't remember that was in the middle of the story where it was like Spider-Man had to find who stole that pie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, or something where it's like, oh yeah, I forgot that was the story where it was the mystery of if Spider-Man was going to make it to the disco on time.
Right.
You know, stuff like, I think a lot of times with some of these characters, and maybe more so with Marvel because they don't do as much alternate reality kind of.
Yeah, they try to hold to it.
Yeah, like what we kind of think of with some of these characters is like their definitive stuff, it's like moments, and then we just kind of push all those moments together and we go, this is what Spider-Man is to me. Mm-hmm. It's this to this to this to this. And like the month to month stuff kind of gets lost in there and you just go like, I really like Spider-Man. I really like the X-Men.
If you're going to write an in continuity Spider-Man Superman story, you can't ignore all that's come before. You're going to write an interaction that someone's going to say, hey, that can, in the letter space, that couldn't actually happen because back in 1970, whatever, they did this. So it makes no sense that they do this. And
well, it's like, think about, you know, okay, so I don't even know if this is relevant, but it's just something I thought of. And now I think it's kind of funny to think about. Like the this first, like that first arc of the Jim Lee, Chris Claremont X-Men, from which started with, you know, X-Men number one, like who even remembers, like everybody, you know, so many people think so fondly, remember so fondly on that. And it's like, what you think about is like that five
gatefold
cover. You think of that cover and you think of like individual moments in that where cool stuff happened. And
you're
like, oh man, that's like burned in my brain. But it's like, who even ever remembers or talks about the fact that the, you know, one of the main characters in that was Magneto's acolyte, Fabian Cortez. You know, was that the guy's name?
That sounds
Cortez?
Right. Yeah. Fabian Cortez.
Yeah. Oh, like Fabian, is that right?
I'm pretty sure that's right. Yeah.
Okay. Which I was just thinking, it's like, because Fabian Nicieza was like a writer for Marvel at that time. And I was like, well, they've really named a guy like something that... Anyway, my point is, look, the fact that we are not even 100% sure that that was the guy's name. And he was like a really important character in that.
And yeah, for I guess a couple of years in X-Men, he was a good villain.
Yeah. And or, you know, he was like, at the very least, he was like an important player in their story. It's like, no one ever thinks about that. You know, like who can even name any of those other acolytes that were like part of that like Power Ranger squad with...
Was there a guy with four arms whose name was Four Arms?
That was in... See, that was in X-Force.
Oh, is that not Acolytes?
No, he was a member of the Mutant Liberation Front.
I don't
with know. Strife, you know, fighting X-Force. Yeah? Yeah, Four Arm. That was his name. But not spelled F-O-U-R. It was spelled F-O-R-E, like your forearm. Like, what? Anyway. So, well, Matt, as always... just like the other times we've done this, this has been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Thank you for talking comics with me. I hope we get, like I said, I hope we get to keep continue doing this because it's a lot of fun. Is there anything you want to tell people about before you leave?
No.
It's your daughter's birthday.
Yeah. Yeah. It's my daughter's birthday, turning 7. Don't feel like I'm old enough to have a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 7-year-old. So,
yeah. You don't look like you're old enough to have kids that old. So,
thanks.
Congratulations.
Yeah, not, I don't have anything going on. If anybody listens, a university student, yeah, I'm campus pastor at the University of Memphis with a campus ministry called Chi Alpha. So if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's XA, like Chi Alpha, XA Matt Drain. And I'll tweet about comics and life stuff, encouragement stuff, theology stuff. Yeah.
Occasionally you'll tweet at comic writers asking them if you're ever going to get answers.
Didn't even get to talk about that.
We did not get to talk about Green Lantern at all. Matt and I did have a real good conversation about the last several years of Green Lantern comics at lunch, though. Maybe for another time we'll talk about that.
We'll talk about those Green Lantern miniseries that didn't resolve at all and frustration.
And then Cullen Bunn. Hey, well, to his credit, he answered your question.
Yeah.
So thanks, Cullen Bunn, for answering Matt's question. Gave you a little bit of closure, at least, sort of.
Yeah, to know you're not getting an answer.
Yeah, to know that you at least have the closure of knowing you're never getting an answer, in the comics, at least. You could probably ask him at a show what his plan was.
Yeah.
Anyway, guys, so follow Matt on Twitter, XAMattDrain. All this stuff will be in the show notes. Follow me on Twitter, at the Chris Haley. Follow the show at KICTM Podcast. Email the show. Thank you, Brandon, for your email and everybody else who's sent in emails that I have not got to answer yet. This one was just especially pertinent, so I really wanted to get to that because we were already talking about
Secret Empire.
So email the show at keepitclosetomepodcast@gmail.com. You can support the show at patreon.com/thechrishaley. You can also support the show just by tweeting about when we have a new episode. If you like the show, tell your friends. That's like word of mouth is the best possible advertising. Leave us a review on iTunes. If you subscribe there, 5 stars or more, if you can figure out how to review
iTunes.
Us. Yeah. For more than 5 stars, that would be great. Thank you guys so much. This has been a lot of fun. I don't remember how I end the show. I think I say, and I'll just leave you with this.
When Captain America throws his mighty shield, all those who chose to oppose his shield must yield. If he's led to a fight and a duel is due, then the red and the white and the blue will come through. When Captain America throws his mighty shield.
He's a beta fish? Oh, so his name is Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Okay.
But April just calls him Ginsburg. But he has to have the whole name or else the joke doesn't work.
Right.
So, yeah. And I was looking at that fish when April got him. And she was he was a birthday present. The whole tank and everything was a birthday present from April's friend. And I was like, just looking at him. And April's just like over there talking to him, looking at him stuff. And I was like, my fish don't know what's going on. What are you talking about? Like, why are you bothering? But then one night I was in here and like I walked over there to look at him. And I swear it was like he swam like right up to like look at me. I was like, oh, maybe he does know what's going on. Maybe he does kind of register what's going on, can see us and everything. And I was like, hey, you want some food? And his answer is always,
yes.
Yes. Absolutely. Yes, I do. And when he eats, it's always very like dramatic, emphatic, like Pac-Man. He's just like, give me this.
He's that's got a right. That's right. You give me some food.
I was like, well, and every time then, you know, I see April feeding him or I'm feeding him and it's like, he's so like, I don't know, just not bossy, but you know, it's like, it seems like he's such a, I don't know what the word, I was like, why are all our pets jerks? Like, why are we get these, like, they all have such these like attitudes about stuff.
He's got personality.
Yeah. That's a nicer way to put it. All right. Anyway.